Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Today, we move on to the final letter in our OPENS formula, O-P-E-N-S. That's your formula for a joyful and bountiful second half of life. And the letter S, the last letter in OPENS, stands for service to others. And to kick off today's program, I've got some good news for you and some not so good news. Let's take the not so good news first. That is that you'll never gain lasting contentment, joy, and satisfaction by concentrating solely on yourself. I think you knew that already. You didn't really need me to tell you that, but servicing your own needs over all other needs and ignoring the well-being and aspirations of others. Say you were to lose 45 pounds, got in great shape, and are extremely proud of your appearance and your reshaped body, and you're bursting with energy. But now that you have all this additional energy and this positive outlook, what will you accomplish with that energy? Just serving yourself will drain it mighty quickly. So that's why you need to involve others. But now the good news, and I speak from personal experience because I sleptwalked through life for about 30 years, and in the last 10 years or so, I've been so enthusiastic and had such a great time. By your very nature, as you take charge of your own destiny, you change your basic outlook on life from negative to positive, and you accomplish genuine peace of mind, you will become much more attuned to the needs of others, and before long, without really trying, you will begin to approach interactions with every person you meet as a win-win situation. You'll also begin attracting other positive individuals to your life, and you'll be avoiding those negative situations and people that tend to pull down your emotions. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You'll bring others along rather than them influencing you to negative thinking. Ask yourself, do you ever feel genuinely fulfilled just, say, driving around, showing off your brand-new Mercedes-Benz or playing all alone with your prized possessions in the basement? I mean, you can only enjoy them so much. And we all need human contact to appreciate being alive, but contact with others is never enough if every conversation revolves around what you want and what you've accomplished. Ignoring the other person's wants and desires and achievements and for your benefit only. And when I speak of service to others, the S and the OPENS formula, I speak in broad terms. And, of course, there's volunteering in community, church, or synagogue, youth organizations, national organizations battling disease like the American Cancer Society or Alzheimer's Association. Volunteering is what we generally think of when we talk about service to others, and of course that also means financial contributions where we give up something that we might buy for ourselves to contribute to a cause. But it's much broader. The term service is broader than just volunteering without pay, because I'm also talking about service on the job. Serving your boss and coworkers, those reporting to you, and of course you're being paid to serve your boss or to serve the company, but I'm talking about going beyond the call of duty and volunteering for assignments with no immediate benefit to you, going the extra mile to help out and make the day better for others, including fellow employees. And I will give you an example of how not to help coworkers on the job. This is something I'm kind of embarrassed to tell about, but no, I'm not really. Many years ago, a fellow employee that I didn't much care for, this guy was always bragging and talking about his career. There's nothing more obnoxious, I don't think, than sitting around with a person that's constantly talking about their career and not about yours. And actually, of course, I was probably competing with this fellow to get ahead like everyone else was. But he was always bragging and saying, I need to do this to further my career, and I had a great meeting with so-and-so and blah, blah. So anyway, one day I noticed he was headed in for a meeting with the big boss, the senior vice president of finance, and as he was walking up to the door, I noticed that his fly was completely unzippered. Now, if I'd been in service to others, I would have obviously said, "Hey, Bob, you better take care of your fly before you go in for that meeting." But I didn't. I just chuckled to myself, and I always wished I could have been a fly on the wall to find out how the wind got knocked out of his sails when the VP finance said, "Well, you've got to zipper up your fly there, Bob." But anyway, that's an example of how not to serve others. And at home in the family, I trust your marriage is considered by both you and your spouse to be a loving 50-50 partnership. And that sounds great, but it's easier said than done. Are you dedicating enough time and energy to serve your spouse and your kids? On the contrary, here's sort of the opposite scenario. Suppose I'm a man who loves football, and I do love football, and my wife's not particularly into sports, and all day Saturday for college games and all day Sunday for the NFL, I'm glued to the front of the TV from noon to 11 p.m. at night Eastern time, and my wife is willing to tolerate the situation. She basically kisses off all weekend entertainment and social life for 5 months out of each year, and even worse, she sacrifices her weekend that she could be doing things on her own to cook meals, discipline our kids, walk the dog, and even fetch me a beer on my every command. And by the way, during the week, I'm always working, never have enough time for the spouse and kids. Now, guess what? This simply doesn't work, as you know. And assuming your marriage survives the football season, what will you give your spouse in return to make it up to her? It just does not work when everything is to one person's benefit at the expense of the others. And most of all, most of us, though, of course, want to serve those that we love, and we also want to make a positive impact in our jobs and in our communities. But let's get down to where the rubber meets the road. In setting priorities, who should come first, others or me? Well, let's start with what does the Bible say? Now, I'm a Christian, so I'm going to quote from the Christian Bible, but other world religions have similar passages, and I'm going to look at the New Testament. Since I'm a Christian, and the New Testament calls for self-sacrifice. Jesus in Mark 9:35 says, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." And Paul in Philippians 2, 3, and 4, verses 3 and 4 says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not on to your own interests, but to the interests of others." Boy, that's a pretty tough commandment to follow, isn't it? But in contrast, other passages in the New Testament praise worldly success and self-affirmation so long as we respect God and respect others. For instance, Jesus in Matthew 17:20 said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." And Paul in Philippians 4:13 says, "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." So is there a conflict in the Bible and in life? Well, based upon my personal experience since I renewed my life back around the turn of the century and the experience of others I know, the answer is a resounding no, because in order to genuinely respect, honor, and serve others, you must feel positive about the present and future and your place in it. And it is not evil or wrong to love and honor yourself. Remember, Jesus in Matthew 22:39, I think it is, says, "Love your neighbor as yourself." And people often ignore that, "as yourself." To live the good life, you must be open to suggestions from others and ask for help when needed and give back to others without limits. But you mustn't feel that you're inferior to others. And if you don't love yourself, you'll resent others' success. I did that for years. I noticed somebody I knew that got a new job or made a bunch of money, and I resent that and have a chip on my shoulder the size, you'll end up with a chip on your shoulder the size of Texas or maybe even Alaska. And once you do begin to believe in yourself, I'll wager that you'll start to notice and care about those around you. as renewed individuals soon discover they cannot remain totally self-absorbed. By your very nature, the renewed you will desire to spread positive emotions to others. No one can sustain a positive mindset for long without personal sacrifice. After a stroke of good fortune, no matter how good you feel, the euphoria will not last unless you move beyond self-interest. So spread the positive energy by helping others. And you can never sublimate completely your desire for the good life, for honor and recognition of your service to others, as well as the good life for yourself, nor should you. You want to help others, bring others along to a joyful, positive living. You're not expected to sacrifice to send others ahead while you lag behind in frustration and misery. That would be ridiculous. And if you're wealthy, share some of the wealth, but not to the extent that you yourself become poor. That doesn't make a lot of sense either. And if you're like me, I'm certain there is nothing more pleasing than a genuine thank you. That's a real reward for me when I know that I have helped somebody else and had a favorable impact on another. And here's why genuine midlife renewal is best accomplished together as a team, in your small business, in your work group, or with your family, so that no one is left behind. As a brief mental exercise, just attempt to imagine an individual who somehow could accomplish lasting satisfaction in total isolation without any interpersonal contact and without serving any immediate needs of others or without receiving any acknowledgement or contribution. About the only examples I could think of maybe would be a theoretical mathematician who solved some formula and had a lot of self-satisfaction from that, but I think that would be limited unless other mathematicians learned of his accomplishments because he'd want them to know. Or maybe a computer software designer wouldn't need immediate feedback, but there again, at some point in time, he'd want people to be using his program or his new design. At the other extreme, you probably know individuals who spend their entire lives in service to others but lack joy and don't really seem positive about it, the kind of resentful servant that we can all picture an image of. And due to their long hours of these long hours of sacrifice and service to others bring satisfaction to their life, and do they reserve any time for personal joy? That's not a good position to be in either. As a renewed individual, I recommend that you seek the balance through a concept I call enjoyable servanthood. And this concept combines service to God and others with a deep and abiding appreciation and enjoyment of yourself. You know, every man and woman, including you, has his or her own unique blend of talents and preferences, and the secret is to combining personal satisfaction with exceptional service is to volunteer only for activities which you thoroughly enjoy and you're uniquely qualified to perform. Also, to locate a job, and we talk about this constantly when we're talking about career on this program, locate a job that will pay you to have a good time. And there are jobs out there, and we're going to be talking about an approach to that over the next few programs when we get into career and that type of subject. If you enjoy cooking, for instance, on a volunteer basis, if you enjoy cooking, offer to prepare a meal at your church or a local homeless shelter. If you relish business planning and execution, offer to counsel disadvantaged or minority entrepreneurs seeking startups or to grow their own business. And if bass fishing is your favorite passion, take an underprivileged child along with you to the lake next time and show him or her how to fish. You know, you can have fun yourself while you're serving others. And I urge you to steer clear of any volunteer organization you would struggle to accomplish or any assignment or performing activities you really just don't like. For instance, you need not feel guilty turning down a project where you really can't add significant value. If you hate number crunching, do not volunteer to serve on your church's finance committee. If you hate fundraising, don't agree to go around and raise money for your favorite political candidate. And if you're like me and you hit your finger every time you try to pound a nail, despite how good an organization it is, what their wonderful purpose, don't volunteer for Habitat for Humanity. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with praying to God for self-fulfillment at the same time you pray for others. There's also nothing at all wrong with turning down assignments that you're not good at. And when you pray for yourself as well as others, this does not mean that you or I should consider ourselves somehow superior or more deserving than our neighbors, but it does mean that we can take pride in our own unique blend of talents, and we should relish displaying those talents in service to God and others. And it's also more than okay to accept recognition for dedicated service to the common good. And please do not shun public acknowledgement like some people do. If it makes you feel special, in your own small way, you have helped to change the world. On the other hand, no one should attempt to hog the spotlight. And most of us feel especially proud when we accomplish something important as a member of a team. And I'm sure you've seen the Stanley Cup Championship with all the skaters hugging each other as they lug that big cup around, or the football players hugging each other after a game, or the Major League Baseball players toasting each other with champagne in the locker room. And without exception, the world's most successful business, government, and athletic team leaders and coaches publicly acknowledge fellow participants who contributed to their success. And let's all realize that mutual satisfaction reaches a common level, and that's just a fact of life. You may recall from your high school, maybe it was junior high or high school class, where your teacher demonstrated that liquids in connected tanks settled to a common level, and the teacher probably displayed two clear plastic tanks with a connecting tube, and when he or she filled the left tank, liquid flowed from left to right until liquids in both tanks reached precisely the same level. Heck, maybe that was grade school. You had that demonstration. It's pretty simple. But anyway, individual human experience in a marriage, a family, a business, work group, or a department, it always tends to, in the same manner, settle to a common level. Because no matter how hard I try, I will never make my loved ones joyful and content in my presence unless I also demonstrate joy and contentment. If I am sour and have a chip on my shoulder, they're certainly not going to be content and happy, even if I try to serve them. And no matter how hard they try, my loved ones can never make me happy unless their emotional needs are met and they too remain satisfied. Without exception, positive emotions in relationships must be shared, and mutual contentment can be achieved only through give and take, with each individual willing to sacrifice for another. Heck, this is all common sense, isn't it? And over time, would I remain satisfied if the people I'm around are not satisfied? Of course not. Would I remain joyfully content if all the sacrifice was one-sided, no matter how much my wife loved me? Over time, her spirit and energy undoubtedly would wane. Because I love and respect her, there is no way I would ask her to sacrifice every personal aspiration and pleasure in life entirely for my benefit. And anyone that tries to do that, usually the final chapter in that book is divorce. And to sustain my happiness, I absolutely must ensure that my wife is content also. And that's what service in the home is all about. Similar to liquid in connected tanks, levels of joy and contentment among spouses and life partners and family circles and in small groups at work and at play flow from person to person and settle to a common level. And unfortunately, just like positive emotions do, so do negative emotions. And unlike the high school science experiment, we can never correct the problem of mutual malcontent by just adding satisfaction to one party only. To the contrary, the ideal solution is for one or more highly motivated encouragers to spread positive thoughts and emotions throughout an entire group. And as a renewed middle-aged individual, that I encourage you to become an encourager in your circles of friends at work and at home, because positive energy does flow to others, as we often talk about. After we bring our lives into positive emotional balance, we still must confront the complex issue and perplexing issue of personal resource allocation. We all know that our world faces critical resource allocation issues among rich and poor countries, between present and future generations. You know, they're always talking about how we baby boomers are hogging all the Social Security, and our youth are going to be left out when they get older. Between the haves and have-nots, we all remember the 99% versus the 1% demonstrations a year or two ago. There's constant turmoil undertaking, and there are no simple answers either for you or me or for world leaders. I can't presume to tell you how to allocate your time and money. My only advice there would be to do what seems right to you. As a freshly transformed woman or man, and I trust that you soon will be renewed if you're not already, I have no doubt that you will experience a renewed zest for living, along with a heightened awareness of the needs and desires of everyone around you, because once you really understand and feel good about yourself, you will always notice those around you, and your conscience will guide you in the allocation of limited time and resources. And depending on your religious faith, you may also want to pray for divine guidance. You also obviously will want to consult the Bible or whatever religious tracts that your religion has. But as a practical guide, I like to talk about this guide for resource allocation. I call it enjoy and employ. And the first word reminds me to enjoy what I have. First of all, be gracious and accept with gratitude everything that you have. Excuse me. But once I achieve some degree of financial security, I see no harm in kicking back and enjoying life. That's what life is all about, isn't it? There's no inherent harm in material possessions so long as you and I utilize them judiciously and we're genuinely thankful for what we have, and we're not just running out to buy possessions to go one up on our neighbors or something to impress somebody, because that really isn't all that fun. Misguided in the second part of it is to employ a portion of my personal wealth, money, time, energy, and talents in service to others, because there's nothing more foolish than undermining midlife renewal through selfish hoarding. And a self-absorbed, covetous individual inevitably ends up both miserable and unfulfilled. We often hear about lottery winners. Some turn out very well. Others become hoarders and pretty much litter away what they've won and end up in a worse shape than when they began, either financially and probably emotionally as well. And a misguided individual cherishes possessions and uses people. In contrast, a truly fulfilled individual cherishes people and uses possessions. So search your conscience, read the scriptures, pray for guidance, consult with loved ones, then allocate resources in the precise manner which your conscience tells you is right. One thought in closing. Excuse me. You do not need to hit a home run every time. Each one of us should be on constant lookout for every small opportunity to serve. Just pay a sincere compliment to a friend. Hold a door for an elderly person. I know my wife did that the other day at the restaurant, and smiles of appreciation were so great. You know, help an elderly person out to fill a confusing tax form or a Medicare application. Smile or say hi to a child and wink at them. That's, of course, you'll probably, somebody will think you're a sexual predator, so you have to be a little careful on that. But children are so wonderful to share happiness with and recognition. Over time, it'll become your second nature to tune into the small, immediate needs of those around you. Most of us can best begin our service to others by concentrating upon the immediate needs of our own family and friends, people within our circles of influence. But then as we become more and more accustomed to serving others, we can broaden our circle of influence and help more and more people. And habits ingrained from assisting those in close proximity help fuel the desire to serve the broader community. And pretty soon we're serving a great number of people in various ways. You and I earn our living by receiving compensation from others, but we make our lives count by giving ourselves away. Never forget that. And I have a whole chapter on the service to others in my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. And please preview the book on my brand new redesigned website, www.middleagerenewal.com. You may have been to that address before, but we've totally redesigned the website and the content's totally new. You can visit our new Mark bookstore. It contains over 100 books on all aspects of midlife renewal, both for yourself and for the businesses and organizations where you work and play. And also we have you can watch our videos and read my blogs, and you can obtain a free gift. So go to that new website today. It's www.middleagerenewal.com. Well, in this segment, we're going to talk about a subject never before discussed on this program, missed motherhood. And I'm not a woman, so I can't speak from personal experience, but my wife Gloria confirms that when women meet for the first time in a social setting, one of the first and primary topics is children or grandchildren. How many do you have, boys or girls? How old are they? Do they still live at home? If grown, are they married, living nearby, in college? What kind of work do they do? And what about the woman of middle age who has no children? Does she feel left out of the conversation? Do other women, and for that matter men, consider her kind of strange and wonder why no kids? Is she barren, a lesbian, selfish, overcommitted to career, too picky choosing a mate, unattractive to men? They may even feel sorry because she is not a, quote, whole woman, missing out on the essential female experience of motherhood. Well, guess what? In preparing for today's program, I discovered several startling facts. First, missed motherhood is a lot more common than many of us think. Studies show that 1 in 4 women born in the 70s will reach 45 without giving birth, and for women born in the 1960s, already 45 or older, that figure is 1 in 5, and as many as 75% of women in America will have had or will have one or more experiences of missed motherhood in their lifetimes. And the pain of missed motherhood is not limited only to women who are infertile. There are 5 different categories of missed motherhood, and we'll discuss those 5 categories later. And even women who eventually have children, either naturally or through adoption, still may experience a profound loss or void from a lost pregnancy or giving up a child earlier in life. And even though 1/3 of pregnancies in the U.S. result in miscarriages, loss of a fetus is seldom discussed, especially if early in the pregnancy, leaving the expectant mother to grieve alone in silence. And as my guest Connie Comstock explains, the absence of a child or loss of a pregnancy is a void and frequently a profound loss, and it's experienced by many women as a failure, a lack, a shame, or something that needs to be fixed or hidden, even when it is a choice. And she has done us all a giant favor, both women and men, by writing a book on the subject, Honoring Missed Motherhood, Loss, Choice, and Creativity, and she's here to discuss it today. And Connie Comstock, MS, was training as a research scientist when she first experienced missed motherhood. Since then, she has lived and worked in Japan, traveled widely, designed cultural and educational exchange programs. For more than 35 years, she has been coaching individuals and couples. She's a senior presenter and facilitator of the Hoffman Process, a 7-day intensive personal growth program, and she speaks and holds workshops on missed motherhood all around the country. And hello, Connie. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
It's really a pleasure to be here, Roy, and that was a beautiful introduction. Wow. Thank you.
Well, to begin, please describe the five categories of missed motherhood, the time in a woman's life when she misses out on having a child either by chance or by choice.
Well, the first is what hit me when I was 26 is the inability to conceive a child that's one, and I was infertile.
Yeah.
And was told that at 26. The second is the end of a pregnancy through miscarriage or abortion. The third is birthing a child and placing it for adoption.
Yeah.
The fourth is missing the opportunity to conceive and being childless by chance. In other words, you wanted a child, but the time was never right.
Yeah, it's never right, and then suddenly you realize you're too old and you can't have them anymore.
And this is happening so much now.
Yeah.
And the last category is choosing not to have children, to be child-free. And the women who choose that are also on the outside and considered kind of strange.
Yes, that's right. Well, the women who lose babies through abortion, miscarriage, or even stillbirth, and then have children later in life, sometimes continue to grieve and fill a void for the child they lost, even years later. Is that...
Yes, that happens. That happens, and sometimes, unfortunately, what they do is they go into denial, and they think that they've gotten over it because they had another child.
Yeah.
But in fact, they find out that deep down there's this kind of sorrow, which can lead to a using up their energy, depression.
Huh.
Nothing quite feels right, you know, even though they have what they want, which is the children that are that they're parenting and raising. And so they're kind of surprised sometimes to find out that the grief hasn't gone away.
Huh.
And in the work that I do in the Hoffman process, it's one of the things that gets discovered a lot of time, and people are just stunned, both the women and the men, actually.
Yeah, they don't probably realize why they're so grieved and so lacking in energy.
Yeah.
It's so often the case, it even goes back to childhood. We don't really understand why we're not feeling good about things.
Right.
But, well, so many women who cannot conceive or have a miscarriage suffer in silence. And discussion of childlessness remains seems to be such a taboo even today in much of society. And what are some things we as concerned friends and relatives should never say to a woman or a couple who has just lost a baby or can't conceive? What are some no-nos?
Yeah, there's a lot of no-nos. Like, you'll get over it. You can have another child. Why don't you adopt? You know, all sorts of things that are really rather cruel and without meaning to be. I mean, people are trying to be helpful, but actually the most helpful thing is just to listen and to say, I am so sorry, and not tell the woman what to do about it. Because
I love that you already have children, so, you know, you can be happy about that. Or the comment is probably for the best, it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's amazing. There's like a long list of things that are just commonly said that are meant to be supportive, but they really aren't.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, what are some of the tragic thoughts that experienced by women who miss motherhood, and how can we as close friends and loved ones help them to overcome this self-destructive thinking? I know one thing, obviously, is just listening, like you said.
And encouraging the women to talk.
Yeah.
I know from my own personal experience, it was a really traumatic. It was about 2 years of my life in my 20s. It was very abrupt for me because I had a physical situation where I could never conceive.
Yeah.
And which was discovered when I was in my 20s. And so I went into a deep depression. I really felt like life wasn't worth living. I'm not whole. I can never get over this. And I realized that I really didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
I was ashamed.
Yeah.
I felt that it was my fault. There's, you know, like I was flawed. And so while people knew I didn't have any children, they didn't know why. And I didn't talk about it until later when I realized that actually talking about it is the way that we heal. Actually putting it into words and sharing it and being heard. And, of course, it was a horrible trauma for my husband, too, because he really wanted children just as I did. And he went into his own depression, and this happens a lot in couples with infertility.
Yeah.
They both are depressed.
It's kind of contagious, too.
Right. And then they can't really support each other because they're so worried about hurting each other.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But.
Well, what are some of the ways that those who missed motherhood can move from grief and emptiness into wholeness, learning to enjoy the freedom they have? Actually, you know, there are some advantages in finding the happiness in a new redesigned life. How do you get started in that process?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the big breakthroughs for me, and I think a lot of other women, is when they realize, okay, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And so for myself, it was much easier because it was very abrupt and it was very clear. And so in order to really want to go on living, because I was suicidal for a year, I realized I needed to create a different dream. I needed to create a different vision for my life that would be exciting. And I think that's what we really need, one of the things we need to do, especially for women who are infertile and they're never going to have their own children of their own biological children. They may adopt, or they may marry somebody who has children and become a stepmother.
Yeah, that's another option.
But it is to think about and refocus their dream and say, what is it I really love that I can have? Because what happens is we get focused on what we can't have.
Yeah, it's so important, like you say, to close the door on impossibilities and move forward to alternative possibilities. I mean, there's so many things. For instance, a woman that learns she can never conceive can still be active with children as a volunteer or teaching or preschool or whatever, you know, she wants to do to get involved with children. There are so many ways that women can help nurture children, even if they're not their own children.
Right. And as long as they hold on to maybe I'll have my own, which is what's happening to a lot of women nowadays. They're going into their 40s and they're and freezing their eggs and doing all sorts of IVF and so forth. They're suffering because they are still holding on to a dream that has such a small percentage of being successful.
That's exactly
And
right.
That's why we call about miracle babies for the women in their 40s because
You
know, they really are a miracle at that point. As a result, they suffer. It was really interesting. Daniel Gilbert did a great study about decision-making and found the same thing that we're talking about is when it's you can't change your choice, you're much happier with whatever you have. When you keep thinking that you have another choice, you suffer.
That's very true. Reach the conclusion that I'm never going to achieve something that I wanted to achieve and move on toward. I'm so much more happy than if I keep clinging to clinging to the chance, one in a million, or I blame myself for not trying harder to reach this impossible goal.
Right. Right. So we kind of shame ourselves and torture ourselves, and instead of looking at the things that are good in our life and that are exciting, I feel like I led a really interesting, exciting life.
Certainly have.
And I had a lot of fun. And I actually, at this point in my life, consider myself, well, I have for years, consider myself child-free, not childless.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And it really, it was a great change to hold that I'm really benefiting from not having children. It's not like that was my choice, but it's my reality.
Think of all the women that you're helping or want to be motherless women that you're helping with this book that you put out. And simply, if you hadn't had that experience, you never would have written the book and you wouldn't be helping so many other people through that.
Right.
Through your coaching. Well, every May in America, we honor moms through Mother's Day. What cultural shift do we need to recognize and honor women who have missed motherhood, either by choice or chance? Is there some way we can honor those women at the same time?
I think that, you know, Mother's Day started not so terribly long ago, in the early 1900s. But when it was being a mother was everything. And I think that that's a cultural shift that's happened, that women have choice with contraceptives and having careers and so forth.
Yeah.
And so I actually created a couple of Mother's Day services, which I did with my minister, and about women's creativity and women's role in nurturing and bringing forth and making contribution. It's very humiliating to be in in any kind of church service or celebration on Mother's Day, even being in a restaurant and being like an outsider because you're a woman without children.
Yeah.
So I think it's wonderful to have Mother's Day, but I think it should I think we can have services where that's inclusive, and I think that that's what people are really thinking about, but they're still in that old thinking that every woman has a child, and it's not true anymore.
Yeah,
only
80%
of the women have, or less, have children. Actually, at the age of, I don't know, it's something in the 30s, around only 50% of the women have children.
Hmm.
It's, I mean, childbearing has moved so much later in a woman's life, it's really, it shocks me.
Yeah, I know our daughter was a Navy pilot, and she'd never dream really of taking the time out to have a child.
Right.
She was so loves what she was doing so much. But if from childhood your primary goal has been motherhood, but at middle age you've missed out, what are some worthy alternative life goals? I guess there's all really no limitation on what they can be.
I think that you know, one of the things that happens for women who have children early in life, like when I was young, a lot of women had children in their early 20s, mid-20s.
Yeah.
By the time that they were in their 40s or 45, their kids were going off to college, and so they were starting to explore what else they could do in their life.
Yeah, that's right.
And women would go, start working, go back to work, go back to school, be more active in the community, have a lot of freedom to travel.
Yeah.
And so I think there's just a lot that's available for women to choose to do. And it's so freeing not to have to worry about childcare.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, your book, a lot of what's in your book would apply to empty nesters, or women who have spent most of their adult life raising children, but now, don't have them around, and they can explore a whole lot of new things, both with or without a husband, if they have one or they don't have one.
And then they look forward to becoming grandmothers then.
Yeah, that's true. We're still waiting to have our first grandchild. I don't know if we ever will. But there's also women like my wife, Gloria, who lost an adult child. Her daughter, Kristen, who I mentioned was a pilot then, was killed in a plane crash in San Diego years ago. And there's also the same type of grieving you can do about losing a child, but it doesn't make any sense to grieve over that, something that can't be replaced either, and that may be the time to explore new opportunities to serve or do other things in your life.
I think it's always important to grieve loss.
Yeah.
But it's not an endless process.
No, and it can't be, because then after a while it becomes suffering rather than beneficial. It's just prolonging the agony.
So one of the things about the book, Honoring Miss Motherhood, is in the third section it talks about actions that women can take on their own and with others and in the community, specifically about Miss Motherhood, but it applies to any sort of grieving.
Yeah.
Because grieving is the way to heal, not shutting it down, not repressing the feelings and thoughts, and the more we put it into words, the quicker we can move through it, although there's no time schedule per se.
Yeah, no, you can't set a time. I'm going to stop grieving on September 30th or whatever.
Right.
Well, as middle-aged husbands, what can we say or do to help our childish wives if they become childless wives, if they become depressed in their 40s and 50s over missed motherhood? Is there anything we husbands should do, or should we just listen and not try to interject anything?
I think encouraging your wife to talk about it and to actually listen, and then to share how you feel about not having children, perhaps.
Yeah,
because
that's
it isn't
true.
Just the women.
No,
what I found I lead this 7-day personal growth workshop is it's the men too.
Yeah,
and they don't feel like they can say it because it's like an accusation to their wife that.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. It, you couldn't have kids, and it's all your fault, or whatever.
Right.
Or we should have had a kid back 5 years ago when you were too wrapped up in your job.
Yeah, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Or I actually find that there's couples who have made a conscious decision not to have any children, and they're both in agreement about it. And then as they get in their 40s and their 50s, they start having the freedom to recognize what they missed out on not having children, not having regrets, but just recognizing, you know, like it's a part of life that's a possibility. Not all of us have that experience. Not all of us have all experiences. And some people didn't get to travel at all and wish that they had, and that was a loss for them. So being able to...
I especially feel sorry for, I'm not sorry, but, you know, missing out a lot on really parents who start their families really young and don't really have the opportunity to move into adulthood and establish their adulthood before they have the responsibilities of raising kids, because that, you know, they
That's
miss
right.
out on a lot.
And they don't actually know what life is like without kids.
No,
at
that's
all.
True. Well, tell us about your new book, Honoring Missed Motherhood. It's very interesting how it's organized. You have a whole section on your own experience, and then you have, I think, 12 or your sister and 12 other women that are childless or missed motherhood at one point or another that have their stories.
Well, it was really interesting. My sister and I worked on this topic for over about almost 10 years talking about it. And originally we had thought to write a more analytical, you know, like professional from a distance book. But what it came to me was that it really needed to be a personal story, because to touch other people. So I came to telling my own story, which is the first third of the book, and how the infertility, the childlessness has impacted my life up until the present time.
Nice.
It isn't like it just you're just over it. And the second part is I interviewed a good number of women with different combinations of these five categories of missed motherhood. So some may have had many pregnancies, miscarriages, IVFs, and finally had a child. That's, you know, like one. Or they... Anyway, there was a whole bunch of combinations. Maybe they had an abortion, then they had a child, or maybe they had a child and then an abortion.
Yeah, that was a fascinating, you know, hearing all those different stories.
Yeah. So.
And then in the third part, you have some actual suggestions of self-help exercises.
Steps to take, and I also include the whole script for the motherhood, the Mother's Day services that I created.
Oh, I see. That's great. Well, what's the best way that someone can preview or purchase your book? How should they go about doing that?
If they go to Amazon.com, they can. It's on Kindle. It's on print. They can look and start reading it. They can go to my website, which is MissMotherhood.com.
Yeah, I saw.
A lot of information on it.
Yeah, I noticed on your website you also list some events and workshops, and you have Missed Motherhood coaching. So that.
And so I work with women individually on the phone, so I can work with women anywhere in the world. Actually, I do a lot of coaching on various topics, but including Missed Motherhood. And I also weekend workshops, and then I have a sharing group. And one of my projects right now, I have a group of women who I meet actually meeting with today, who I meet with once a month, who've had the experience. Most of them are in middle. They're all in middle age, or late, and talking about it, and it's so fascinating to see how over the months, it doesn't take very long, their attitudes have changed about themselves.
Great.
Finally, one woman last month said, "I'm coming out of the closet. I'm no longer ashamed."
Yeah, that's so great when you share experiences with other people that had similar experiences, and that's such a wealth of benefit for everybody.
So one of the things I'm really wanting to do is have see sharing groups start all over the country where women get together in groups of, and there's some steps for doing that in the book and on the website.
I see.
So that they just gather together, six or eight women, and have basically a sharing group where the other women don't comment on what anybody says, but simply share and listen.
Nice.
And it's phenomenal what can happen in that kind of circumstance. It's very simple.
It's so great when you start concentrating on somebody else and helping them by listening and being receptive rather than just concentrating on your own issues. I know that makes a world of difference.
And instead of trying to fix somebody else, the actual listening allows the person to fix themselves.
That's exactly right. Well, our program is all about midlife renewal and moving forward to a joyful, bountiful, and productive second half of life. And you certainly don't want to spend your middle and latter years of life grieving over missed motherhood or missed fatherhood, for that example. And that's one of the if-onlys or it could have been of life that we so often suggest you avoid. And if you lost a child at or before birth or for whatever reason never had one and in any way feel regretful or bad about it, I urge you to preview Connie Comstock's book, Honoring Missed Motherhood, and it most definitely will point you to a better way forward. And thanks a million, Connie, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Roy. I really enjoyed talking with you.
And thanks for tuning in today. And next week, we'll get down to business and talk about your career. Goodbye from now, for from Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.